want to say a word again to our young people. Quite often it seems like when you're young, the only time that you hear from adults when you do something wrong. And you get lots of attention. And I want to say to our young people how much I personally appreciate you for being here, for sitting together up front, for all the things that you do and the things that you don't do that your peers are doing. I want you to know it's an encouragement to all of us in the congregation to have a fine group of young people like we have here. And we want to say to you how much we appreciate you. And the congregation said, in our last lesson, we discussed how a massive, powerful elephant could be trained, or as it were, tricked into believing that he was shackled by a small rope attached to a stake driven in the ground, when in reality, it's not possible to truly limit such an animal by such a flimsy shackle, but rather what limited that elephant was the shackles that were around his mind. We noted that today's teenagers are in danger of allowing yourselves to believe that you can't accomplish anything very significant as a teen. And it's because our society, or at least in great part, because our society has lowered the bar of expectation to teens to the point that nothing significant is expected of those in these suspended years, these throwaway years between childhood and adulthood. These years that per se didn't exist until fairly recent times. Consequently, these teen years that should be a launching pad to a successful, productive life can be easily wasted. And the consequences won't be limited to your teen years, if that's the case. These years, good or bad, do launch you into your future. A historian once said that George Washington, quote, became the man that he strove to be. I think about that and I realize that statement's true, not only of George Washington, but of every one of us. You will become the man or the woman that you strive or don't strive to be. There's a strange, and at least for some, probably unwelcome verse that launches me into what I believe young people need to understand and believe and accept and act on to enable you to remove those crippling shackles from around your mind that keep you from living a truly victorious life and not become a victim blaming others for your failures, which so many of your peers will do. And the verse is found in a really interesting place. It's found in Lamentations. Lamentation 3:27 says, it is good for a man to bear the yoke while he is young. Now, if you're young, that doesn't sound very good, does it? But the truth is that it is good for a man to bear the yoke when he's young. Now, there are some things that I wish that I knew, and people probably said them to me, and I was too dense to understand them or knew too much on my own to believe them. But there are some things that I wish I had known early in life that I think would have really helped me. In fact, as a matter of fact, as I put this lesson together, I mailed it to a good friend of mine who's a doctor in another state, and he read them in a couple of days, and he wrote me a long, nice letter back and said, I wish somebody had told me this when I was young. He said, if I would have believed it, it would have made a real difference in my life. And I feel the same way. And one of the things, and I have lots of things, my kids will vouch for this, that I like to tell young people. One of them is, you don't have to be pretty smart or popular or rich to be successful in life. And I don't really think we know that when we're young. Because we look at the people that really look successful and they're either pretty smart, popular, or rich, it seems. But you really don't have to be any of those things. In fact, any one of those things can, in fact, be detrimental to your success in life. I had four daughters, and I used to talk to them about the value of being beautiful, because it's important to girls to be beautiful. And I said, I want you to pick out one person that you know that's beautiful that you can look at over a period of time and see that they're really successful. Now, I'm not saying that there are none, but I am saying that those things, including being beautiful, can substitute for doing things that are real and meaningful in your life. Because beautiful people, at least for a little while, they get a get-out-of-jail-free card. They get lots of perks in life without having to do anything. People that are popular, people that are rich, people that are beautiful. I mean, you can illustrate it, I think, from lots of angles. And I've mentioned this before. Whenever, in the one or two times in my life I've been pulled over by a policeman for some reason or other, I get a ticket. And my daughters almost never got a ticket. And, you know, they wanted to talk to them. And it was really kind of interesting to me. And it causes me to realize, and as I have gotten old now, and I look back at my classmates, the ones that were in fact, to some degree, rich or pretty or popular, and I see what's happened to them in their life, I realize that sometimes because they had those, quote, advantages in their life, they never really disciplined themselves. They never really felt the need to do something with their life because they were just coasting on those things. And so, again, I want to recommend to you the book, Do Hard Things. And I got this basically, fundamentally, from that book. And they had five hard things. Well, I don't have time to preach five of them, and I was going to do five, but I don't have time, so I'm going to do three. Three hard things that if you'll begin practicing these things in your life, it'll produce some really powerful results for you now as well as in the future. And by the way, this is not just exclusively for young folks. It's never too late to start practicing right things in your life. And number one, and I think maybe this one is the scariest one of all, and that's why probably most people stop right here. And they never do the hard things in life because this one is the first step. Do hard things that are outside your comfort zone. Let me say that there are a number of our young men who've already done some things that many people and most people in the world would consider the number one hardest thing to do. And that is to speak publicly. And we have a number of young men who've already done that, and I commend you for it, and I promise you this. If you'll continue doing that and other things, it will benefit you in every part of your life. Every part of your life. It will help you in the business world. It will help you in your relationship with your family. It will help you in the church, in every part of your life. And if you'll refuse to allow fear, which is what you did to do that the first time and the second time and the tenth time, and for some of us the 100th time or maybe thousandth time, if you'll refuse to allow fear from keeping you from doing something, then you'll go much, much further in your life than those who allow ourselves to be controlled by fear. There are lots and lots of folks. There are some, I dare say, in this audience, and since I don't know anybody, I can't recall anybody specifically telling me that, then I can say this without stepping on anybody's toes. By the way, that's one of the downsides of being at a place preaching for a long time. I like the ignorance of being new, the new kid on the block, because as you're here for a while, you find out where more bones are buried, and you have to be real careful how you say things because people will think you're talking directly to them. So ignorance sometimes is bliss in that matter. But I dare say that there are adult men in this congregation who have turned down jobs that they would have otherwise liked to have because it involves some public speaking, who have been passed over for promotions because they were afraid to get up in front of people and speak. And if you'll not allow your life to be controlled by fear, then your future is unlimited. For some, doing things outside our comfort zone are things like meeting new people. Something as simple. There are some people that are terrified to meet new people. Or running as a young person for a school office. Or leaving home. Or talking to a friend about Jesus. Whenever there's something inside of you that would really like to talk to somebody, and you just can't get your nerve up to do it. Or trying out for the team. Or standing up for something or against something that you know that's wrong. Or standing for something that you know that's right. Or speaking up in class. There's many, many, many things in our lives that many people, perhaps most people, allow themselves to block off because they're afraid of things like public speaking. Tyler thought about graduating from high school early, but he wasn't sure if he could do it. So he didn't. After high school, he had several ideas for business startups, but he didn't want to risk losing the little bit of money that he had if they went under, so he decided to wait. He considered going to college to study environmental engineering, but he wasn't sure that that's what he wanted to do, so he stayed at home. Now Tyler's 21 years old, and he hasn't failed at anything. In fact, he hasn't really done anything. He's missed opportunity after opportunity to grow and to explore and to discover and get stronger. See, life is full of scary things. You start your first day of high school. You deliver your first speech. You get married. Certain events mark important passages in our lives. Before certain events, you were one person. And after that event, you're another person. But Tyler has spent his life avoiding such firsts. And the result? He's basically the same person that he's always been. And he hasn't grown. You know what keeps you in your comfort zone? What the fence that defines your comfort zone is? It's fear. And as you get to the edge of your comfort zone, you feel your blood pressure rising. And you feel yourself getting nervous. You feel yourself getting afraid. And this perhaps the greatest personal enemy that you'll ever face in your life is fear. And so if you'll make a practice and a point of facing your fears, the things that you fear the most, face those things. And don't run from them. It's also the greatest enemy of your faith. Fear and faith can't stay in the same bucket. That's why the Lord said repeatedly, over and over, to his disciples, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Because fear limits us. Keeps us from being what the Lord wants us to. It keeps us from reaching the potential that he's put within us. It keeps us from using the abilities that the Lord's given us. In 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7, for God did not give us the spirit of cowardice or timidity, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline. You know what self-discipline is? Doing the hard things. Doing the hard things. Disciplining yourself. You know what the key to conquering fear is? It's not gathering up all your wits about you. It's not about how strong or weak you feel. It's about obeying God. And if you'll put it on those terms, if you'll understand it in those terms, that God's never asked you to do anything that he's not going to make give you provision and to enable you to accomplish it. And so when we feel that fear, our heart and our mind needs to go to, is this something that God wants me to do? Now, fear will tell you, no, it's not. But reality should tell you, it very likely is. If I'm at the edge of my comfort zone, there's something out there that I need, another step that I need to take that I'm afraid to take. And you can ask yourself, do I trust God enough to step out of my boat and walk toward Him? That's the first hard thing. Do hard things that are outside your comfort zone. Don't allow your life to be controlled by fear. The second hard thing is go beyond what is expected or required. How many of you know who Willie Franklin is? I know Tyrone does. Several of you do. Shortly after Willie left the Baltimore Colts, he went to Harding University, and before very long, he was speaking at youth rallies all the way across our brotherhood. And he came to Durant, Oklahoma, where I was preaching to speak at a youth rally there. And Willie always has had special rapport with young men. In fact, he held a meeting at Porter, was it last year? I remember. And what, 3 years ago? Really? That tells you something. And we went over there, and young people from places in the area where he had been, there were young men, two rows of young men that had traveled, had their parents. Now, how many young people insist that their parents take them to a gospel meeting somewhere else? Huh? Well, these young men begged their parents to take them to where Willie was speaking. And he's always taken a lot of time and had special influence on young men. And, of course, being a pro football player certainly contributes to that, and his personality does also. But this is back in the early 80s. And Willie was there, and it was after he had spoken, and there was a bunch of young guys that were around him, and he was talking to them, and one of them was telling him he was on the high school football team, and he immediately asked him, and I just happened to be close enough to overhear the conversation. He immediately asked him, he said, how many extra push-ups do you do a week? And this kid looked at him and said, what? What do you mean? And he said, if you only do what the coach requires and what everybody else does, you'll never be any better than average. And I don't know if that young man was impressed or not, but I was. And it's really kind of interesting because that's not anything new, is it? I mean, that's not information that came from Mars, is it? That's just something really, really practical. That's something that is self-evident. If you only do what everybody else does, you're just going to be probably just about average. But if you really want to excel, you're going to have to go beyond what's expected, beyond what's required. And if you only do what your mom and your dad and your coach and your friends and your teachers and society expects of you, you're never going to excel. The reason that it's hard, the reason that this is a hard thing, going beyond what's expected or required, is because it takes self-discipline. And that doesn't come easy. That's the hard thing in life, isn't it? Disciplining ourselves. It's easier to take the road of least resistance. And that road leads either to failure at worst or at best mediocrity. Is that what you want for your life? And as a young person, you have a choice about what your life is going to be like. You've heard me talk about the fact that in the eighth grade, I was selected as an outstanding male athlete in my high school. Picture in the yearbook, whole nine yards. The problem was, we didn't win a single football game that year. And I can't remember if we won any basketball games or not, but if we did, it wasn't over one or two. And so as I look back, as proud as I was of that, what that amounted to was that of all the losers, I was the best loser of all. Some of you are gifted in certain areas. You can do better than average without even really trying. You can make a B, maybe even an A, without really even studying. But talent can only truly be developed in an environment of self-discipline. And you can have incredible talent, but if you don't put it in the right environment, it would be better off if you didn't have it. You have to develop the right environment in your life so that your talents can truly come out and benefit you and others in your life. And an environment of low expectations, being above average, can be a trap that leads to complacency. You see, good enough is not good enough. It's not. And if you satisfy yourself with being good enough, then you're cheating yourself. Do you know why so many foreign students excel in our schools? And not only in our schools, but in the marketplace. And it's not because they're so smart. That's our cop-out. That's our cop-out. That's what we say. They know better. It's not because they're so smart, but it's because they're not controlled by low expectations. It's because when they come over here and they are blessed enough to be able to come to America and go to schools, particularly secondary schools or even primary schools, they know that when they go back, it's not going to be good enough for them to show their report card and they made straight A's. That's not good enough. They have to understand it because they're going to be the ones that people are going to be looking to get things done because they had the opportunity to get the education that very few people had. And so being good enough is not good enough. And let me say something else. Doing the best I can is what people generally say when they're failing. Whenever somebody says, well, I'm doing the best I can, that's generally not true. That's generally your cop-out. And I would challenge you to really do the best that you can. This came up in Brother Raymond Walker's class this morning, and we didn't get to pursue it. I would have liked to have heard him pursue it, but he even made a statement very similar to that, those of you that were in his class. But doing the best I can is not good enough either. Just being good enough is not good enough, and doing the best I can. Now, if that was truly real, that'd be one thing, but that's become a cop-out for us. God's standard is not for us to be the most godly person in our youth group. God's standard is, be holy because I'm holy. In Hebrews 12, let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. That's our standard. That's what we strive to live up to, not the people around us. God's standard is so high that we never have an excuse to stop growing until the day we die. And so do hard things that go beyond what's expected or required. And then number three, do the hard things that don't pay off immediately. And this is hard too. And it's particularly hard when you're young. There are not a lot of really big decisions that we make in life. Becoming a Christian, that's a biggie. Getting married, that's a biggie. Going to college and what school you go to, that's pretty big. Taking a job, that's pretty big. Having children, buying a house, there's a few big decisions. But there's an infinite number of little decisions that we make all the time. And these are the hard ones. They're hard because, number one, they don't seem important. They're just things that are there that we just do sometimes day in and day out. They're hard because nobody is usually watching and nobody notices if we do a good job or if we don't do such a good job. And in these things, these hard things, we can do just enough to get by, just enough so that we don't get in trouble. Our mom tells us to do something or our teacher tells us to do something or we have an assignment and we do just enough to pass. Just enough to get by so we don't get griped at. They're hard because they're not glamorous, because they're not fun. Things like studying for tests. Things like holding your temper with your parents or your brothers or your sisters. Things like cleaning your room. Things like obeying your parents. And they're hard also because they don't go away. They're the kind of things that have to be done over and over and over and over again in life. I remember when I was young, somebody said, and it really impressed me, if you do the job right the first time, you won't have to do it again. And I really like that. But you know what? They never did mow the yard. There are lots of things that you can do up to your full potential, but you're going to have to do them again and again and again and again in life. And it gets really easy to just barely do them good enough to get by. But if you'll do those hard things and you'll do them to your capability, if you do the little hard things, you'll have far more and better choices about the big things when they come around. If you avoid the little things and you just do enough to get by, when those big things come up, you're not going to have nearly the degree and the level of choices to make that a person who's done the hard things is going to. I want to give you a verse that probably you've never applied, or at least let me say, I don't know what you've applied, but I never have applied to doing the kind of things that we're talking about as a young person. It's in Romans chapter 5, verse 3 and 4. It says, "We also rejoice in suffering, because we know that sufferings produce perseverance, perseverance produces character, and character produces hope." And the word for sufferings is literally pressings or pressures. And it says we rejoice in pressures. Really, what are the things that put pressure on our lives? Well, expectations do. If they're high expectations. Sometimes we get a little bit upset if we think somebody's expecting more out of us than we're capable of doing. But let me tell you something. The greatest thing that'll ever happen to you as a young person is for somebody that you respect to expect great things from you. If everybody that you know just expects you to just get by, then that's probably what you're going to do. But if you have somebody that you look up to, and that person really sees something in you and has high expectations of you, then that's one of the best things that will ever happen to you in your life. And you'll look back one day and you'll know that. We rejoice in pressures because pressures produce perseverance. That means I don't quit. Perseverance. If you withstand pressure, then you'll get to the point quitting is not an option. Walking away is not anything that appeals to you. Perseverance produces character. People sit up and notice somebody who doesn't quit, somebody who doesn't walk away, somebody who steps up to the plate for the hard things. And then character produces hope. Young people, there's no way that you can possibly know how important it is that you learn to do hard things without complaining. Success in life is more about doing little things than it is about doing big things. Because if you don't do the little things, the big things are not going to come your way. God is never going to trust you with big things tomorrow if you're not faithful with the little things that He's entrusted you with today. Remember Jesus' story in Matthew chapter 25 about the man who had three servants and he gave each one of them a certain amount of money. And whenever he returned and he called them in to account for how they had done with what he had left them with, two of them were really happy to see him, and they came in and happily reported that they had doubled his money. And his response was, "You've been faithful over a little, I'll set you over much." And we find later in Luke, I think it is, that he said, "Put them over this number of cities." And so it was a big reward that came. But the third servant came in and he had done nothing at all with what he was given. He hadn't lost it. He still had it. He had it wrapped up. But he said, "I was afraid. and I didn't do anything with it. He refused to venture out of his comfort zone. He was afraid to take the risk. Fear controlled his life. And the master's angry response was, "You wicked, lazy servant." And he turned to those by him and he said, "Take his money away from him and throw him outside, where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth." One more question. How can I stay motivated to do these small, hard things? These things that are boring, that nobody really notices, things that are not fun, things that have to be done over and over. And the answer is, do it for the Lord. Really, do it for the Lord. Colossians chapter 3, verse 20. Addressed to young folks, it says, "Obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord." That's why you do it. Do it for the Lord. Don't do it only because or if you decide that somebody deserves something. You do it for the Lord because it's the right thing. He summarizes his instructions to the whole family, wives, husbands, children, and fathers, by saying in this same context, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you'll receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. That's the little things in life. That's doing those hard things in life. Whatever you do. You remember the Karate Kid, the first movie? Have y'all seen that? I didn't know. They've come out with so many sequels. I didn't know if you'd seen the original. Remember the scene where Miyagi is training Daniel-san? And he's promised to teach him karate. And so Daniel-san is all excited about this, and he takes him out to his old car, you remember? And Mr. Miyagi says, "First, wash all car. Then wax." Wax on, and Daniel says, "Hey, why do I have to?" And Miyagi interrupts and says, "Ah, remember deal, no questions." And Daniel says, "Yeah, but," Miyagi says, "Hey." And he makes this gesture with his right hand. He said, "Wax on, wax off. Wax on, wax off. Breathe through nose, out the mouth. Wax on, wax off. Don't forget to breathe. Very important." And he walks away, still making the motions. Wax on, wax off. And he leaves him to wax the car. Do the little hard things that don't pay off immediately. The things that you can't see any sense in. And you don't know how in the world this is going to relate to anything. How it's going to help you in your life at all. Trust God. It will. He promises you that it will. Young people, if you're unwilling to do the hard things, you're not going to go very far in life. You're not going to go nearly as far as you could. You remember the elephant? What was holding him back? Was it that little rope and that stake? Or was it the shackles in his mind? Do the hard things. They pay off.